Welcome to the Coda Catch-Up podcast. In this episode, we have some more listener questions. These questions actually come from Saul Willers. So how are you going, Saul? Saul's actually a friend of mine, and he's been so kind of sending a bunch of very questions here for me. I'll start off with the first one. He's asking, what got you started in web development? Now, this goes back quite a while. This is back when I was in high school, and I was interested in computers quite a lot. I was actually going to go into IT and not into web development. I was more so inside the like pulling apart machines, networking and stuff like that, server security. And I started playing around with Flash. I was part of this program called the Laptop Program, and we got to investigate various technologies and try them out, present on them. And I tried out Flash, and I really quite liked it, and I thought, this is kind of cool. And I found that I could do stuff on the web with it. I thought, no, this isn't too bad. So I kind of started going with that. And then I ran into someone who ran a wetsuit company here in Australia. And we basically kind of swapped some web development for some wetsuits, and that eventually turned into a sponsorship. And that kind of got me started. I thought, well, I can start doing this stuff on the web, which I quite enjoy, and I can fund my bodyboarding. Sort of like it was quite an addiction back at the time. I don't do as much bodyboarding these days as I'd like to, due to work. But that essentially got me started in it, like just being able to support a passion of mine. So that's what really got me started, and it sparked my love for the web. The second question is, what was your first aha, I get this moment in programming? I think the first moment was just understanding loops and execution, finding out how I could work out how these loops worked and how that could interact with things. Loops was a pretty big one, as well as learning all about my conditionals, all the kind of real basic priming parts of programming. And essentially, if you know how to get, well, if you've got those down pat, that you could translate that to essentially any language. It's just a minor syntax change. And that kind of was just a massive aha for me, like, oh, this makes sense, you know. This is a very common pattern across everything. If I understand this in a single language, which for me was PHP, or a little bit of VBScript, actually. But, yeah, essentially in PHP, and it kind of like, well, I can look at some other technologies and I'll be able to just work it out, because all I've got to look for is loops, conditionals, and things like that. So that was kind of my aha moment. The next one is, what got you interested in Rails? So I'd heard a lot about Rails and how it just made development a lot easier, especially when bringing on the whole MVC-ish kind of architecture. And it was more so, not so much, it was, I suppose it was Rails' conventions, which made it very easy. And when you went from project to project, it made it very, very simple, because everything was kind of structured the same. But more so, it was the abundance of Ruby gems. So gems are like packages in Ruby, and they solved a lot of problems, like an absolute ton of problems for me, and made development a lot quicker. So I like that side of things, as well as Ruby's actual language itself. It's quite nice to write and read. So that really brought me in, and you know, you bundle that in with all the things you get from Rails, that just made it seem amazing. So these days I am primarily a Rails developer. I used to be primarily a PHP developer, doing on various frameworks, but now I'm just doing Rails development. I do still do a bit of Drupal work, a fair bit of WordPress, but generally I'm just in Rails. And I do say Rails work over Ruby work, because even though I'm doing Ruby, but I'm also doing the Rails kind of Ruby, it's very, very rare that I'm doing anything that's not Rails related. It's very rare that I'll be working on a script that's just pure Ruby. It will be integrated into Rails in some way, shape, or form. The next question is, do you think there's a value in frameworks like Django, or even a content management framework like Drupal 8? Drupal 8 is a little bit of a loaded question from Saul, seeing as he is a Drupal developer, and he is actually a core maintainer of a very popular Drupal module. But I think there's value in any kind of framework, to be honest, because it essentially it saves you time of basically recreating the wheel. You don't really need to recreate the wheel. There's a lot of tutorials help out there in terms of for frameworks, as well as it just saves you time getting bootstrapped and up and going. Django, it's for anyone who doesn't know, it's a Python framework. So it's essentially what Rails is to Ruby. And it's really, really nice. I've got some friends who code in Django and they absolutely love it. For a content management framework like Drupal, I definitely think there's a huge benefit there. Although there is a big learning curve with Drupal, that's its only problem, is that learning curve. But I think with Drupal 8, that learning curve is going to be a lot smaller, and as well as the features that it brings being built on Symfony as the base will open it up and make that barrier to entry a lot easier. So the theming system is switching to Twig, which is more like a liquid style markup language, making it a lot less scary, because some of the functions and stuff you had to do in Drupal were a little bit scary if you had to do some theming or anything like that. And being Symfony based, a lot of the configuration and stuff like that has changed and it's a lot easier. So I think there's a lot of value in that. And I probably also should touch on that, what Saul means by content management framework. It's because Drupal people say it's a CMS, but it's actually a framework. It's quite like a hybrid, or where it's more, it feels more like a framework to me, because the CMS is what you see is like a product of that framework, and you can use Drupal outside of the actual quote unquote CMS. So I think there's a huge benefit in learning Drupal, especially if you're in Australia, because Drupal itself as a framework is being adopted as the framework to use on government projects. So there's a lot of jobs opening up in companies who are looking for Drupal developers, as well as actual companies who want to get more Drupal work through government. The next and last question is, does your day job allow you to contribute back to open source? If so, are there set hours you can dedicate to that, and to what projects? So essentially, we don't have a lot of time to contribute back to open source. If we do find there's bugs with particular, for example, RubyGems we use, we will post up something saying, here's an issue or something like that. And if it is pressing enough and we do have time, we can actually go and submit a pull request and get that fixed. Now, that hasn't really come up. There's been a few where I've been commenting on some issues, asking for some help in terms of a potential bug and being able to work with people to get that fixed. But that's essentially it. I'm sure if there was a facility for us to contribute back to open source, we would. There was a gem I created called Rails Reseed, which we're using in-house now, that I contributed, or it was in my own time, but it is something that we work on there, and I suppose if I needed to, I probably could, I'm assuming. But yeah, we haven't really had a chance to contribute back to open source, but I think it's a pretty valuable thing. A lot of companies do this. So Foundation, you know, that framework, if you work in the front end, Zurb is a company behind that, and they do allow time for that. Thoughtbot is another one who has a bunch of open source gems and systems, and they do the same there. So I think if you're at a company who doesn't allow that, it's worth bringing it up and just saying, like, why can't we, if you are getting some kind of benefit from open source, I think it's valuable to be able to contribute back if you can find a way to do so. I certainly would not go out of your way if you're just trying to do it because, hey, it seems like a good idea. I mean, you really have to want to be doing this contribution and have a good, valid reason for it, I think, as well. Because if you're just doing it for the sake of doing it, I don't think that's the right way about it. I think you want to be solving a problem for yourself as well as others. Some people, it's a funny thing, like I've noticed, like some people are like, yeah, we contribute to open source, and they use it as a marketing thing, when it really shouldn't be. It shouldn't be about bringing notoriety to your company or something like that. It should be to just simply help others, be very selfless about it. So that's essentially it. Thanks for the question, Saul. I do appreciate it. If you don't have any comments, questions, or anything like that about this episode, please leave a tweet on @CodaCatchUp. Or leave a comment on codacatchup.com. Also, please make sure you subscribe in iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. And if you have some time spare, please leave a review in iTunes or whatever service you like. And hopefully we can build the audience more and more with the show. I do appreciate everyone who's been listening and sending in questions. I have some more to go through. And all the great thoughts and responses from people has been phenomenal. So thanks again, and we'll catch you at the next episode.